Golf Smarter number 299, published on September 20, 2011, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And now a short engineering note. I didn't realize that my microphone cable was damaged during the upcoming interview, so my sound quality is nowhere near my personal standards. I apologize and promise that I hope it doesn't happen again.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Jeff Ritter says that golf swings are like snowflakes. What?
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter, Jeff.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for having me again.
Well, thank you for joining us. You're definitely one of the people I wanted to bring back to start this celebration of number 300 that's coming up on the next episode. You being number 299, I thought it was appropriate. You've been on this program a number of times. You've been a big friend. You've been a great friend of Golf Smarter. And even most importantly, you spent time with us when we came down for our Scottsdale adventure, and you met with the group of us, and you had dinner with us, and we did that live recording. So I really appreciate your support throughout the entire time we've been doing Golf Smarter, and really glad that you can make it today.
Hey, thanks so much. I mean, it's such a great show, and I really mean that, and it's been a real pleasure to be part of it these last couple of years, and also be able to, you know, experience firsthand some of the golfing community that, you know, are staunch followers of your program. So I feel like I know I said this before, I feel like I'm kind of part of the family. I always follow what you do, and I listen to the shows that even I'm not on, which I'm not sure a lot of coaches do. So it's exciting to be here, and I'm looking forward to, you know, rolling our sleeves up and seeing what we can help the golfers with today.
Awesome. That's very nice. I want to catch up with you. We haven't talked to you since February when we did our Scottsdale adventure. First, I want to ask about your iPhone app. How's that working?
Yeah, the iPhone app's going really well. It's Jeff Ritter Golf app, and it's been out probably since March or so. And the download numbers are consistent, and it's been a really good thing for my business. A lot of coaches are maybe a little bit leery of capital expenditures and trying to put products out there, but I really have to encourage them to do it because that's the way things are working these days. Through Facebook and YouTube and the smartphones. I mean, it's really important to be able to get your brand out there and to do it in a way that's really easy for people to experience what your coaching is like. I mean, I think that traditionally coaches, they're just looking for that in-person experience, but I think there's a lot of golfers that want good quality coaching that maybe don't have the financial resources, or logistically maybe they're a mother or father of two kids, they can't get down for that in-person coaching session, and they need a way to be able to think about their game and to start improving, and online seems to be the place where that happens. So I think that from a coaching perspective, if you're just doing in-person coaching, and that's the only way that you're getting your coaching skill set out there, then you're really in some ways alienating a very large part of the golfing population. So I've been lucky to be able to get more into that online marketplace. It's been good for me. And the response that I've had from people that don't come and see me and pay me for a golf lesson has been in many ways just as rewarding as the people that have decided to make the trek down to Arizona and come to my lesson tee.
Wow. Well, you've always been incredibly proactive. You were on top of YouTube when it happened. And as far as the golf instructors that I've spoken to, you're very progressive and forward-thinking about how to get your content, besides writing books, getting your content out to the public.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a thing that's been exciting for me, not just from the perspective of connecting with consumers, but also I've really developed relationships with a lot of coaches out there that have maybe seen some of the things that I've been doing and had some questions about it. And one of the things that I've always sort of learned to do, and a lot of it comes from my father, is to really operate from the abundance mentality. And to me, that means that there's enough golfers for everyone. So one of the things that really is unfortunate sometimes in coaching is that you know, coaches don't get along so well because they have a certain methodology, or they're located somewhere geographically where they're competing with a lot of other coaches. And I think when you look at the online space in particular, you got to realize that the more coaches help each other with best business practices, the more they share ideas, whether it be teaching related or technology related, the better the teaching industry comes off as a whole. And it's really important that the public has a perception that teachers are qualified business professionals as well as great coaches, so that when they decide to make that trip to Arizona or California, they decide to, you know, block off a day in their busy schedule from their children to go work on their golf games, that they know that they're getting a high quality experience. So I really feel like we're in it together, and the more we help each other, the better, you know, we are as a whole.
Good for you. Good for you, because there are people who are convinced, there are instructors that are convinced that they have found the absolute secret and that they're the only ones that know it. It's amazing to me how not just that they've discovered the secret to the perfect golf swing, but they're convinced it will help every single golfer.
Yeah, you have to have a lot of flexibility in your coaching. And I think the longer you coach, the more you understand that. There's a lot of fantastic new, young, up-and-coming coaches, and there's a lot of great information out there. And there's certain models that work, and more than one model works. If you look at the Hall of Fame, you know, look at a Sam Snead versus a player like a Curtis Strange. I mean, they don't swing like one another at all. And you have certain methodologies like Jimmy Ballard, which would be more of a up and down swing in motion that moves side to side, which Curtis Strange really embodied when he was winning all those U.S. Opens. And then you look at what's happening with the stack and tilt group of coaches, which teach something exactly the opposite. So if you really understand the golf swing, you start to understand how each model works and why each component fits together to develop a neutral hit. So when someone comes to you for a golf lesson, you have to be able to look at, number one, how they currently swing, number two, where they've been, what they've tried before, and then number three, you know, physically, you know, what type of movement might mesh best with what their goal set is. So I think if you really, you know, have only one model that you believe in and you try and paint everyone into a corner, you're going to help a lot of people, but there's going to be a lot of people that might not jive well with what you're getting out there. So I think a really great coach understands that, believes in flexibility within their methodologies, and as a result, they can teach anybody.
I wasn't planning on talking about this. I got an email a couple weeks ago from a guy. I don't think this guy's a PGA certified instructor, but here's part of what he said. And this is what I'm talking about, how everyone's convinced that they have the absolute right answer. And
right.
Again, I don't think this guy's a PGA instructor, but he says, I have attached an unedited document I wrote from experience. Preset body angles are the problem. Restoring natural alignment, talent, and physical traits that traditional golf eliminated will eliminate 95% of golfers' swings problems. Read about what the golf industry has done to golfers worldwide. Contact me once you acknowledge the obvious problem and grasp the permanent solutions. And I love this line. Here is your chance to become a leader of change and not just another talking head for the status quo.
Wow. You know, it.
So I opened his Word document. It's 21 pages long.
It was obviously well thought out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But I'm like, wait a minute. How can you call me a talking head for the status quo? I've had 300 shows. Every guy comes on with a different theory. And none of these guys have ever really – most of them have never been heard of before. How can you call this the status quo?
Well, and that's unfortunate. And the thing is you know, I post a lot of videos on YouTube, as you know. And anytime you put something out there – you're kind of opening yourself up for either praise or to have somebody try and tear down what you're saying. And it's unfortunate that when someone puts information out there that has helped other people in their in-person coaching or in an online arena, that if someone else doesn't agree with that, they feel like they have to, you know, slander you with all the class of a political campaign. So you know, one of the things is that as you start looking at content out there, consider not only what you're doing and when you're coming from, but consider what the coach was trying to get across to someone else who really benefited from the information. I know that a coach would never put anything in print or online that wasn't successful or helpful in some way to some people. And a lot of times people out there, they're splitting words. They're looking at semantics. You know, you said this, that doesn't actually mean that definitively. You know, all those things really don't matter. From coaching, it's all about helping people. And if you can really embrace that mentality of trying to enjoy the prospect of looking at things from a different perspective, you know, then we don't have instances such as that. So it's an unfortunate part of coaching. It's always going to be there. You know, anyone who watches football understands the term armchair quarterback. And, yeah, that's just kind of part of what we have to go through. But, you know, the thing I'm most concerned with is the people that I'm helping. And, you know, you operate from that love mentality versus the fear-based mentality. And anytime people are out there slinging mud, it's because they're afraid in some way that, you know, maybe they're not making the kind of progress you are as a coach, or they feel like that's the only way they can get attention. So,
yeah, well, you've heard about the golf instructor's barbershop quartet.
I have not, no.
Yeah, it's called the Five Opinions.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is that, I mean, you know, from a coaching perspective, you know, I embrace, you know, all angles, all methodologies. And it's exciting to see how somebody puts together the pieces of a golf swing in their mind as relates to creating a correct and repeatable impact. And that's exciting to me. I mean, I wouldn't want to go into an art museum and see the same painting hanging on every wall in every room. I mean, that would be really boring and really uninspiring. And when you look at, you know, the players on the tour, whether it be the men's tour or the ladies tour, you know, they don't swing like you swing in a book. I mean, some of them do because, you know, coaching has come along in the last 20 years and people have more coaching readily available. So maybe their postures or their swing planes look a lot more similar than they did, you know, back in that, you know, Hogan, Snead, Trevino era. But, you know, a lot of different swings can work. And I think that a lot of times when you forget to just look at TV, and we look at Tommy Gainey, for goodness sake, I mean, what the heck is he doing? You know, but obviously, I mean, he's compressing the golf ball. He's delivering an angle of attack and club face position that are getting it done. And what are you going to do with him if he shows up on your tee? You're going to put him into a certain model that you believe in based on, you know, X, Y, and Z. It just doesn't work, you know. So a good coach is flexible. A good coach is artistic. A good coach is a unique problem solver. And there's no one methodology that can solve every problem for every person. So I think the more you embrace that, the better coach you're going to be. And the better you're going to get along with other coaches who have been successful. So I'm concerned with what I'm doing and my clientele. And I look to YouTube, I look to the internet, I look to teaching symposiums, and I'll sit down there with an open mind and I'll say, hey, that's kind of interesting. I never considered that before. Is it something that I'm going to incorporate every day in my coaching? Maybe, maybe not. But I guarantee you there's going to be someone that comes across my tee that information might be absolutely perfect for. And as long as I'm open and receptive to learning, I'm going to make myself a better coach because of it.
Well, and I also appreciate the fact that you just don't focus on the swing as helping to create a complete golfer. You offer so much more and focus on so much more.
That's one of the things that's so much fun for me about coaching. I mean, when you give a lot of golf lessons for a long time, or when you do anything for a long time, it's easy to get, you know, stagnant with how you feel about your career and what you're doing every morning when you get up. And the most exciting thing for me is to see people get excited about the possibility that exists within them. And sometimes that's a golf-related possibility. Sometimes it's a mental attitude. Sometimes it's a physical change. And those are the things I like to be able to push out there. So I kind of think of myself as like a point guard on a basketball team. You know, I'm not an expert in nutrition, but I know a lot about nutrition. I'm an expert about fitness, but I know a lot about fitness. I'm not an expert about the mental game per se, from a degree standpoint, but I know a lot about it. And I surround myself with people that do know a lot about those things. So as I'm on the lesson team, I start getting into a dialogue with my student, whether it's about their swing or something else, it's exciting to be able to point them into a direction that ultimately leads to a journey that they never would have had had they not been in that conversation with me at that given point in time. So, you know, I do a lot of work with a nutritionist. You know, I do a lot of work with sports psychologists and whatnot. And to be able to share a personal experience and to help facilitate an experience for someone else where they come back, whether it be a few weeks or a few months later, and say, hey, you know, I lost 40 pounds, you know, or hey, I've changed the way that I'm looking at things and I'm not so stressed anymore. Or, you know what, that right hip that was always bothering me in my golf game, well, you know, it used to bother me every step that I took, and that doesn't hurt anymore. You know, those are the experiences that really mean a lot to me, in addition to fixing hooks and slices and helping people putt better.
And not only do you offer a variety of aspects of a golfer, but you also, I know, have enough knowledge and depth to your personality that you can offer reading materials. And it's perfect because this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. And for Golf Smarter listeners, Audible would like you to try them out with a free audiobook. So all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and sign up for an account, and you can choose any book that you would like to listen to and get the experience of an audiobook so that you can listen and read while you're doing other things. You don't have to just read two pages and fall asleep each night like I do. You can be commuting, and you can be walking the dog, and you can be cleaning the dishes like I do. So I wanted to, again, Jeff, you've been good at this in the past, so I'm going to come to you again. You got any recommendations of a great audiobook that somebody can try out for free?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend 3 Feet from Gold by Sharon Lecter and maybe Greg Reed. I think those are the authors on it.
Yeah.
And it's a book that's it's a success story, you know, based on, you know, perseverance as it relates to, you know, when you have a goal in mind, you know, from a career-based perspective, or you have a dream, it's very easy to get very quickly discouraged in your efforts. And a lot of times, the point that you end up giving up on your dream is the point where if you were willing to go just a little bit farther, you would have had a major breakthrough. And the book starts with the story of a miner, I believe. He was up in the Colorado area. I read this book a while ago, so excuse me, audience, if my facts aren't entirely accurate if you pick this thing up. But,
well, you remembered the name of the book and the author, so I'm impressed already.
Yeah, so let's keep on going with that. But but basically, you know, he'd spent his family's reserves financially and put years and years and years into this dream of being able to strike gold on this land that he owned. And basically, when he sold the land, he gave up. And then the next day, the person who purchased the land just shifted the tunneling area about 3 feet to the right, and there was one of the largest gold depositories in the history of North America. So. It's one of these things where a lot of people are really, really close, and you just have to be able to see the big picture. You have to understand that in life there are ups and downs. And it's really a cool story because a lot of times there's books that are supposed to help us out with our financial well-being, but they're more like textbooks. And this is more a story about a person's journey in modern times as it relates to that older story. And it really gets into not only the attitudes of success, but the attitudes towards your loved one and your families and the things that people go through. And it was a really enjoyable read for me, and I'm sure that on Audible it's going to be enjoyable as well.
Well, while you were talking about it, I looked it up, and it is called, and what a tease you had here, it's 3 Feet from Gold, Turn Your Obstacles into Opportunities. And it's, again, written by Sharon Lecter and Greg Reed, narrated by Dan John Miller. When you first said 3 Feet from Gold, I thought it was about putting.
Oh, really?
Sure, why not?
What would make you think that, Fred?
3 Feet from Gold. It sounds like a putting instruction book. That's perfect for me.
Well
anyway, so try out for free if you'd like, or you have any number of choices that you can choose from, 75,000 titles. And all you have to do to get your free audiobook is sign up for an account now. But make sure if you do it, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible is spelled AUDIBLE, B as in boy. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and get the book. If you want 3 feet from gold, you can have that or anything you'd like.
That should be a golf book, because when you think about a lot of stories about competitive golfers in particular, I mean, it's a tough road to hoe. I know a friend of mine slash client that, he's 41 years old now. He's been trying to make it on tour for years and years and years, and he always comes up a little bit short. Sometimes he gets through stage one, sometimes he gets through stage two. And everyone out there, because of his age, they've been telling him to give it up. Maybe it's time that he, quote-unquote, gets a real job. And then all of a sudden, he'll go out and play a round of golf. And last summer, he shot 59 in a practice round.
Oh, my gosh.
And then all of a sudden, all his friends go, well, maybe one more season. So it's one of these things where, what's the difference between making the cut and missing the cut? What's the difference between, staying with your dream and maybe listening to the naysayers and hanging it up? And, after reading a book like that and, talking with him, my advice is to always follow your bliss and really try and fulfill whatever purpose you feel like you have inside of you. Because if you start to give up and shift course, if that's not what you truly want to do, you're not going to be happy doing it. And I'd rather see somebody, struggle doing what they love, than to live sort of an uninspired existence doing something that the rest of society deems to be appropriate or safe.
Well, yeah, the full title of the book, 3 Feet from Gold, Turn Obstacles into Opportunities, again, that could easily be a golf book, right?
Absolutely.
That's interesting. Well, I'll tell you, I have two sons, and in raising my boys, who are now in their mid to late 20s, I always told them, just follow your passion. Just, don't worry about, what you're going to be doing. Just whatever you're passionate about, find that, and the money will follow if that's what your goal is. And recently, my older one said to me, we were having a conversation, the family was in the car, we were going somewhere, and that came up, and I said, just follow your passion. And he goes, Dad, can you stop saying that? I said, well, why? I really believe it. He goes, it's too much pressure.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, whoa, really? He goes, yeah. I mean, I feel if I don't find it, I'm a failure.
Mm.
I'm like, okay, never say that again. Hey, wow. And I always thought, I've been a passionate person. I'm enthusiastic about what I do, mm-hmm. and I've been very lucky in my career that whatever I'm passionate about, I make an opportunity out of it, and I turn it into my business. And I've had some success, and, I've learned a lot of lessons too, but I never thought of it that way until he pointed it out, and I thought that was a great lesson for him to teach me.
I mean, that's a valuable lesson in communication, because who would have thought that a moment of parental support would be misconstrued or interpreted as pressure, and that's one of the things that's important, to be able to communicate and realize that not everybody responds to the same types of motivation, because perhaps that word passion in his mind is connecting in some way, shape, or form to high energy, high effort, being a go-getter. I mean, do what you love and go after it, and I can definitely see how if somebody isn't particularly high energy, that kind of effort from a communicative standpoint might seem like, I got to get up and go, 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 and that's really scary for me. What if I don't find it? So,
right.
When you look at these motivational speakers that storm the stage and they have the headsets on, they kind of prowl the stage like a caged lion or something like that. They're kind of in your face, and you got to do it now and get up off your butts and go, go, go. And there's a lot of people that love that stuff, and there's a lot of people that don't. So I think finding out who you are on your own time, on your own terms and on your own time, is the thing that people need most. And whether it's delivered to you, overtly or more subtly, I think people, if they know that you just support whatever they do and understand that they need to create their own their own life for themselves. I think that's all people are looking for.
Well, it takes us back to what we were talking about earlier with all golf instructors having a different approach.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody has their own method of doing something. And the concept, what you said, of parental support, not recognizing it being pressure, I think that is normally the case for most parents. We're always trying to do something to help our child, even if we're saying, don't do that, you're going to fall, you know, when they're little kids. And yet, is that really the right thing to say? Because if they don't learn how to fall, how are they going to learn to get back up? You know, so what happens? They scrape their elbow a little bit. Okay, well, they've learned that lesson. Let them fall down. It's okay, you know. And the one thing that really frustrates me about parenting is that people don't get the fact that children will never learn anything from our mistakes.
That is absolutely true. I mean, I don't have any children, but obviously, you know, I've been in.
Well, let me sit you down, son, and tell you a couple
of things. but you're absolutely right. Whether it's dealing with my parents or relationships that I've been in, it's one of these things where, you know, it doesn't matter if you know in your heart definitively what the outcome of this is going to be. The person that you're dealing with doesn't want to hear it, and they don't deserve to hear it from you, because honestly, they need to make their own mistakes. I mean, unless somebody is going to walk out in front of traffic, you know, then you shouldn't be grabbing for their hand, because they need to be able to go out there and experience things on their own. And they need to be counseled only when they ask for counseling. And
well, right. Safety is a whole different thing. When we get into safety, it's a whole different thing. But you're right. You know, just make sure that your kid knows that you're there for them and you'll support them and everything. But we have to teach resiliency.
Right.
We have to teach responsibility. You know?
Well, and I get it all the time, you know, from parents as it relates to their kids in golf tournaments. You know, these parents, they'll go out and they'll line the fairways and they'll follow their kids around, you know, in these tournaments. And every shot they hit, it's live or die. And, you know, a kid will try and, you know, hit the ball over the water maybe to try and reach a par five, and the ball will go in the water and the kid will make double bogey and the kid comes off the 18th green and the parent pulls me over there and he'll say, you know, tell him he shouldn't have done that. You know, tell him how stupid it is to go for a shot like that. And I'll say to myself, he doesn't need anyone to tell him. He saw it go in the water. He knows. He knows. And maybe he'll make the same mistake again and again and again. But at some point, he's going to understand that there's a risk-reward relationship. But for you to yell at him and belittle him and to tell him he can't play golf for a week and all this stuff because his ball went in the water, you know, that's just ridiculous. He knows it went in the water. He hit it there. And he knows what he put on the scorecard. And that kind of communication isn't going to help him, and it's not going to help your relationship with him or her.
Oh, right. And you have to understand the kid's personality. And you also have to recognize the fact that they're probably beating themselves up. So why do you have to do it too?
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm curious. You know, it's interesting because we can get into a conversation of both Tiger Woods and Michelle Wee here about what their the parenting style that they were raised with. Mm-hmm. What kind of impact it had on their career in the long term, you know, where Tiger, when Earl was there, you know, and I don't know the story intimately, but, you know, we saw Earl was there, Tiger was focused, he was on it and everything. And then, you know, when he passed, Tiger changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where it's, you just never know, will you? You know, you
no,
don't know.
Of course not.
From where we're sitting, you just don't know, and you'll never know. So to speculate, it's really, you know, sometimes unfair to the people that are in that fishbowl, but, you know, they put themselves there. And when you're performing well, it's easy to point the finger and say, oh, you know, they're performing well because of X, Y, and Z. And then if you're not performing well, well, it's got to be this. So, you know, it's tough to be in the spotlight, I would imagine. And, you know, I think with Tiger, it's like if you're going to live big and go big in a positive direction and you see the extremes that come from success, then if you fall off the tracks a little bit, then maybe your failures are going to be just as big in the opposite direction, and I think that's what we saw. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to him next season. I think it's unfair for people to criticize what's been happening with his swing changes right now, because it takes time. It takes a lot of time, and it's not just hitting the ball from tee to green. I mean, he's got to be able to see shots as it relates to fairways and pins and trajectories. And he's got to be able to pull the trigger and hit those shots in competition. And he's always been a player that's really worked his golf ball maybe more so than a lot of other players around the course. And now he's changing, you know, everything from his grip to his posture to the angle of the attack to how he's swinging his arms and turning. I mean, all these things are really, you know, intricate on a big, big level. And I think the person that's sitting at home and that's watching golf on TV, they say, you know, hey, here's the world's greatest athlete. You know, why can't he hit a fairway? You know, I hit 12 fairways yesterday. Well, you know, he's got about 40 more miles per hour of club head speed, and he's trying to do things that you're not trying to do. And I think right now, I mean, he's sort of in that inner battle between making the swing he wants to make and hitting the shot he wants to hit and maybe competing on the level, you know, internally, you know, from the gut, so to speak, that he'd like to be able to compete. And as we know, he doesn't play in a whole lot of tournaments. He picks and chooses his spots. So it's probably more difficult for him to get into the competitive groove than maybe someone else like, say, an Iron Man like a Jim Furyk, who's very, you know, non-technical with his swing and plays in a high level of tournaments. So I think this year he'll definitely play better. I mean, he can't not play better than he played this year. But it'll certainly be interesting. And I think that if people are patient with him and patient with his coach, that you'll see some positive things take shape here.
I wish him the very best because he is great for the sport and, you know, draws a lot of attention to it, which right now there isn't a whole lot of attention being paid. We're at our 30-minute mark, but, you know, I can't let you go because in that conversation that we were just having about his swing changes, I don't think that most recreational golfers understand how swing changes can impact your game. And I see so many players that I go out with, and I don't play with the same group all the time. I like to play with different people, and I'll go out by myself and meet people. And with the changes they'll make during a round, they'll talk themselves into, oh, well, the ball did this, so I must be doing that, so I'm going to make a swing change. And these are people that don't have time. You know, maybe they have time to go out and hit the driving range once or twice a week, maybe twice a month. And then there's the people who don't have the time. You know, all they do is go out and play golf, and yet they feel comfortable enough to make swing changes during a round, and yet they've never even seen their swing.
Right, right. I mean, it's a difficult thing, and it's such a big game. I mean, there's the training ground, which is the practice tee or the lesson tee, and then there's the playing ground, which is, you know, something that happens when you put your foot on the first tee. And if you're training and playing at the same time, you're generally going to do a lousy job of both. Wow. So with Jack Nicklaus, I mean, he's been, you know, quoted a million times over as saying that he would go to the range in the morning and warm up before the tournament, and he would see what the ball was doing that day with that particular swing. And people need to realize that your golf swing is really just like a snowflake. We know that no two snowflakes in the history of the world have ever been exactly the same. And in the history of your life as a golfer, you will never make two golf swings that are exactly the same. So one of the things that Nicklaus was great at was looking at the ball flight that he had, accepting that the ball was going to bend to the left that day or to the right that day and to what degree, and then managing his shot making around the course as related to that ball flight, because he knew that he couldn't play and train at the same time. He couldn't be worrying about the line he was going to take and where the ball was going to curve, and also try and feel like he was going to make some kind of a physical adjustment in the way that he was doing it. And as a result, one of the best quotes that I like to send out to competitive players and also junior players, a lot of times people put their self-worth into their swing and into their ball striking. So, for example, if you put someone on video and their swing looks good to them and they're hitting good shots, they feel good about themselves. Whereas if their contact isn't perfect or their club is laid off at the top or across the line or whatever, something that, you know, they don't really like seeing, and all of a sudden, you know, they're not feeling good about themselves. And golf is such a game of emotion and adjustment. You know, when your emotions are riding in a positive mode, so to speak, you know, then you're able to manage the ups and downs. But when your emotions are on the negative side of the fence, it's really easy to get down on yourself and to sort of throw in the towel. And one thing that Nicklaus said, he said, I won a lot of tournaments with different swings. So he's talking about all these tournaments he won, all these majors he won. You know, he's going for the trophy. And he realizes that, you know, if his ball is fading more or hooking more or his trajectory is not on, he just got to live with it and turn into a competitor and try and get the ball in the hole to win the green jacket win the trophy. And I think more, the more golfers will embrace that, the more they'll embrace the artistic side of the game. And they're not going to care if their club's across the line or it's laid off. They're not going to care if, you know, their long-term vision of what their swing could be or should be is not being met at that moment. So if you embrace that, you enjoy the golf game and the experience, especially in competition, a heck of a lot more.
Hallelujah, brother. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because I've been, while we've been having this conversation, and it's really kind of gone in many different directions, but I think you just summed it up, and I've also, based on what you just said, I've come up with the title of this show, which is Golf Swings Are Like Snowflakes. No two are ever the same.
There you go.
And we talked about instruction, and it's basically the same concept. No two are ever the same. Whether that's the student or the instructor. So I think that is really the name of the show. Thank you for coming up with that great title, Golf Swings Are Like Snowflakes. And there's another book for you, buddy. Two in this show. Two in this show. We've come up with book titles for you.
That was my intent all along.
Yeah, right. Well, Golf Smarter is going to get some credit in your book somewhere. Actually, Golf Smarter has gotten some nice credit in your iPhone app, and I appreciate that very much. The episodes that you've appeared on are on your iPhone app. So if you want just a quick reference guide to hearing more of what Jeff has to say through the 5+ year history of Golf Smarter, please go and pick up his iPhone app. It also works on my iPad, so it'll work on your iPad as well. Is there a thought of an Android version of this coming out?
It's something I definitely want to do. You know, the development team behind the app, that's sort of up to them right now as it relates to you know, our long-term vision. I'm sort of deferring to their expertise in the field, but when we sort of put this thing out, I mean, the market was tilted in the favor of the iPhone, so we thought that was the best place to start with it. And then, obviously, very quickly thereafter, the Android, you know, leveled the playing field, and now it's probably, you know, 1-to-1 across the board. So I think that if we have the resources to do so and the long-term vision, then you'll probably see this on the Android as well.
Yeah, it would be great. I'm an Android user, and I know there's a lot of debate on whether it really is 1-to-1, but also developing something for iPhone is not so simple to turn it into an Android app. I know that. So it takes a lot of resources, and you've just got to follow what you feel will be the best distribution point for you. But anyway, best of luck with the iPhone app. Thank you again so much for joining us and helping us celebrate this milestone in Golf Smarter history. And quickly, is there anything exciting coming up before we wrap this up that you've got coming up that we should know about?
Yeah, well, I'm heavily involved with Nike Junior Golf. I've been so for about 10 years, and I teach I teach camps for 1 to 2 weeks pretty much at different locations all over the country. The last couple of years I've been enjoying Lake Geneva, and Nike contacted me from the U.S. Sports Camps office that actually runs the Nike Junior Golf camps, and about 10 days from now, which is going to be October 1st roughly, they're going to be sending me to Shanghai, China.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
So they were going to be doing a one week worth of junior golf camp at a place called the Nine Dragons Resort. I'm actually taking my assistant director, who's a great coach named Aaron Olson, who helped me out with my Lake Geneva camps, there as my assistant in China as well. So we're going to have a nice experience down there and really enjoy it. I know that China is obviously, you know, very big in golf, and Nike really wants to make a huge splash down there with the junior camp market. And so they're going to send me down there. We're going to stir things up a bit and try and get the kids and the parents and everyone in the community excited about the possibilities that exist with this great game.
Go ahead, Jeff. Contribute to the fall of Western civilization. I appreciate that very much. Everything's going to China, and you're just making it worse. Thanks so much, buddy.
Yeah, but I'm going to come back, though, Fred. I'm not going to stay.
Yeah, you'll come back. You'll be in Arizona going, there's a whole lot more business there than there is here. What am I doing here in Arizona?
We'll see how that all works out. It's definitely, for a coach, it's the experience of a lifetime. And it's one of the things I love so much about this profession is being able to, you know, not only stand out in the sun every day and to help people learn how to have more fun playing a game, but also to travel around to different cultures and connect with people on a common level, which is through sports. So I'm a lucky guy, and thank you, US Sports Camps, for the opportunity.
And we're lucky to have you, Jeff. Thanks so much for joining us, and safe travels over there. And keep me posted on how it goes.
Oh, I will, Fred. Looking forward to being on the show again in the future, and we'll hash this whole thing out.
Next week will not be a members-only episode. To celebrate episode number 300, our next show will be free for the entire audience. I'm really excited to announce that our very first guest is returning for his sixth appearance, Dr. Joe Parent, author of Zen Golf. Now, I published episode number one in December of 2005 and am completely shocked that I've lasted this long. What about you? How long have you been listening? Please let me know when you first discovered the Golf Smarter podcast by sharing it with everyone on iTunes or by clicking on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.